Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, hello, party people in the place to be. My name is Asa Beal. This is Foul Territory, brought to you live on Blog Talk Radio. It's just me today. There's no Carson Phillips spots. I tried to get longtime co-host and friend of the show, really lifeblood of the show, if you want to take it all the way back that far, Travis Jones to join us. However, alas, he is comedically involved, something that we wish him well on. But we're going to talk a little sports. This is the teaser right now. You are currently listening to the teaser. After the teaser, shall follow some music, and then after that, we'll get down to business. So the teaser's right now, and in the teaser, you tease what's to come. And what we're going to get to is some baseball. We're going to talk some Braves baseball. We're going to talk about the Braves rotation questions, the impending rotation crunch. And we're also going to discuss some possible all-star selections from across Major League Baseball and maybe kind of hint at which way that we think that should go. Which way I think that should go, because it's just me, and I hold all the power. So with no further ado, as promised, here's your intro song. That's a lot of crack money right there, $500,000. Welcome to Foul Territory. Thank you for joining me on this lovely evening in America, throughout the world, and in bodegas worldwide. This is Foul Territory once again. We're going to be coming to you live every single Wednesday from now till the rapture, or every single Wednesday from now till the end of anything. And it'll be 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. That's our time. That's the niche that we've carved out. And as you know, baseball is our wheelhouse. And I hope it's not too loud. I've got the window open because I don't have a good explanation. It's just so damn loud. Usually I have it closed, trying to limit the possible other noises that could be joining us, possible sounds of children playing, of birds chirping, and all that good stuff, all that good background noise. But I'm leaving it open because that's what I'm doing, and it feels good. We've got a nice breeze coming through. If my voice sounds a little foggy today, it's because I'm coming to you live from what those of us in the biz like to call a post-nap, shall we say, lull. The energy is slowly rising, but I was napping up just up until the research I did for the show, the hours of research I did for the show. So there's that. You know, I just thought I would throw out that. There is that. You know what? Let's do a little bit of one of our favorite, our most sought after, our most ballyhooed segments. Without further ado, getting right into it.
One, two, three, four.
bum.
She's got a smile that it seems to me reminds me of childhood memories, where everything was as fresh as a bright blue sky.
All right, Tommy, you're the oldest. I'm counting on you. Come on.
She's got eyes of the bluest sky as if they thought of rain. I hate to look into those eyes and see it now.
Nice vibrato, buddy. All right, Alice, let's go.
That is enough, Alice. No more out of you. Nothing more from that. We're going to get back into one of the more craftier, clever, more, I don't know, I would say erudite fellows on Twitter. His tweet cachet, if you want to call it, his list of tweets is something to rival really only the master of our time or the previous time. I'm thinking Ogden Nash, Mark Twain, Ambrose Bierce, the cutting satire, the knife that is his pen. And I, of course, I'm talking about my boy, friend of the show, Rob Delaney. Let's call him Uncle. Let's call him the weird uncle of the show. And to the many thousands of you teeming masses out there who don't know about Rob Delaney, go check him out. His Twitter presence is it makes waves throughout the internet. Let's just say that. So I've got a couple of tweets from Rob to read. I'll kind of read it to you rapid fire. Give you 8 or 9 seconds to gather yourself after falling your chair laughing, and then move on to the next one. This is a Rob retweeting a guy named Brian Garth. Garth with two A's. Girl, are you the Iraq invasion? Because this was a mistake. Wow, wow, wow. Well done, Brian Garth. We're bringing that to you live on our territory here. So let's go for another one. Yet again, we're staying away from the world of sports because we need the lightness, the brightness. And here we go. From Rob Delaney, 4 hours ago. Even though it means he's a serial killer, it's nice when a guy has piercing blue eyes. And I have to agree. While serial killers, their work is hard. You know, it keeps them busy. It keeps them, maybe out of your life more than you would like. There are some good qualities, and piercing blue eyes, just one of those. You know, we could also get into neatness, the ability to get things spick and friggin' span in a house. Some people are partial to their flair for the dramatic. There's all sorts of things there. I'm, of course, basing all of this on 6 or 7 seasons of Dexter and nothing else, nothing else. Now you may be saying, Asa, why aren't you talking about baseball? Why are you running your mouth about serial killers, about interneting gentlemen and all that stuff? And maybe the reason is that I'm feeling a little down the dumps these last few days. And those of you who know me know that the Atlanta Braves, and when they're in season, also the Atlanta Falcons, are generally the barometer of my existence. They're the emotional barometer of my day-to-day life. And the Braves have just completed something that very few people would think possible, and that is being swept by the San Diego Padres, a.k.a. the Friars. And that's no fun. In fact, that is less than no fun. That is pathetic. It is low down and dirty. And what it is more than any of those things is untimely. And you can't squander these opportunities to get wins. Every game is essential. When you're trying to build a lead, when you're trying to win your division, just because Washington's in a lull right now, and every time that they lose, if you lose, they don't pick up a game on you, sure, but no time to dilly-dally. Atlanta needs to go ahead and build a lead in this division.
division. They currently sit half games clear, which I do believe is the largest lead across baseball. It is easily, and but at the same time, you got to take advantage of these opportunities and getting swept by the Padres. Yes, it's in San Diego. I don't care. You know, it's unacceptable. And the Braves are 18-20 now on the road. You're supposed to at least break 500 on the road, and they were above 500 on the road before this abysmal series, and now they're below it. And I can't help but speculate as to, I don't know what you want to call it. I don't want to say character, because I don't think that this Braves team lacks in character, but I do want to kind of question their focus. I want to question their mental powers a little bit. Eddie Gonzalez has a big job to do, and it's almost a bigger job because there is such a big lead in the division and because Washington has struggled. The Washington Nationals team, I must repeat, it must be emphasized, was who every pundit, every expert, every prognosticator picked this team to go all the way. And forget all the way. They're working on trying to position themselves for a playoff spot at this point. So when the team that's supposed to beat the world is not beating the world, and you're the team who was supposed to be right behind them, but you find yourself on the front, it might be easy to survey your surroundings, pat yourself on the back, and, you know, tuck into your delicious picnic that you carried with you up to the top of Kilimanjaro there, because you have quite a vantage point. But I say no. Freddy Gonzalez is essential, my friend. I know you're listening. No is the answer. Don't take out that picnic basket, because you might be at the top of Kilimanjaro, but there's higher mountains to climb. That might be the highest one in Africa, which for the purposes of this very strange metaphor is April and May, and maybe part of June. However, you need to pack up lunch, ski-daddle up to them Himalayas, and even the Andes, because you have more mountains to climb in the months to come. There's nothing comfortable about being 6.5 games up in June. There's nothing comfortable. And it's great to be 39-27. That's a swell record. But the streakiness really scares me. And I don't know. I've actually talking with Granddaddy and co-maker happener of the show, Travis Jones, earlier, and we were pondering this as I walked around Safeway plucking organic cherries from the shelves. We were pondering this problem and this kind of lack of putting the pedal to the metal that the Braves seem to demonstrate every once in a while. And you can't win every game. You can't expect to go 162-0 or 159-3. But I don't know. It's disappointing, especially days like today, going into the Padres finale. You should beat this team. You're better than this team. Your lineup is way better. Even though Mahalan is not a world beater, he's good as Edinson Volquez. And you go in there and you don't have what it takes. And the offense, it's hard to figure out. You know, it's hard to figure out what makes a baseball offense click at all, to be honest. It's a very complicated science. We trust our managers with putting together our lineups, with, you know, supporting guys, with making sure that guys are constantly improving and working to maintain their success if they're having success, or as many in the Braves lineup are, needing to change some things, needing to make some real obvious changes. At least it feels obvious to me. So the lineup is perplexing. That's not even the big issue, and we're getting to that in a minute or so. But it is perplexing, and you know, it's like we can't keep three or four guys hot. You know, Justin Upton just put the team on his broad shoulders for the first month and carried them, and we did great. And he hit a lot of solo home runs. He had a lot of timely hits. But that struck out, and he's down to 240. And that's kind of amazing. The power numbers haven't been there either since the first month or so. It's really waned off. The home runs have come much more sporadically. Yes, he had one today, but it was another solo shot. Part of three runs, which is not going to get it done, even against the Padres. Yes, three runs, not enough. Jason Hayward's getting hot. That's fun to see. That's always exciting. Hit a couple home runs the other day. He's been making a lot of sharp, sharp line drive contact. But it's not enough. It's not enough. And the offense is going to have to figure it out. They're going to have to maintain consistency. The feast or famine thing doesn't become them. And I don't know if you can hope to be a division winner if you have this sort of feast or famine thing where if you're – and a lot of it's very esoteric, and it's hard to put your finger on what the heck that means. You know, you're saying to me, okay, well, Asa, obviously the team's going to fluctuate in the runs they score. You know, sometimes they'll get shut out. Sometimes they'll face a shitty pitcher. They'll put up 8. Sometimes they'll put up 15. Who knows? I'm thinking of it from the pitcher's standpoint. Now, I'm pretty sure from my vast experience as sneaking into baseball stadiums and locker rooms. Just kidding. But I'm pretty sure that in a baseball locker room, there's a bit of a divide between starting pitchers and the position players, maybe just the pitchers and the position players more generally. It's not a bad thing. This is how baseball has evolved. It's natural that guys who are participating in the same daily activities and kind of are on the same schedule are going to be more, there's going to be more camaraderie between those guys, which isn't to say that teams don't have a overall cohesiveness, but I think in baseball you'll find, as in other sports, the football, the offensive line are all buddies and the defense hangs together a little more. It's natural. And what I'm driving at here, however swervily and however a moving violation is the pitchers may not have confidence right now. Certain of those guys, I'm not saying they lack in personal confidence, but they might not have confidence that they can go out, start a game, and that they're going to get more than a run. You know, they're easily, yes, the offense could explode and get them 8. And every starting pitcher loves to have a ton of run support, and you'd love to pitch with a lead. But 8 seems like it's even less common than 1 or 2 these days, or 0 these days. I believe the Braves still lead Major League Baseball in getting shut out. That is, in scoring 0 runs over the course of a 9-inning game. That it's unacceptable. It's totally unacceptable, and we've wasted and squandered and squasted, which is the new combination of those two I just made up, plenty of quality starts because the offense was simply a sputterholic. Sputterific, maybe, is a better word. A sputterholic sounds more like someone who enjoys failure or can't get enough of failure. And a lot of people want to point to the strikeouts. I don't buy that. I don't. I think this team, you make it in all sorts of ways, and I don't know. I don't buy that because these guys strike out a lot, there's this sense of doom about and this sense of kind of being resigned to these 0 and 1 run games. I don't buy that. You know, I don't buy it at all. Some guys still put the ball in play. You know, Simmons and Hayward at the top of the order, those are the guys you're really thinking will put the ball in play. I don't know. It's frustrating, and the good news is the Braves are 12 games over 500. It's not as if this is a desperate, dire situation. Not by a long shot. Really far from it, and Hayward's coming around. B.J. Upton's coming around. Yeah. Maybe the guy who the Braves need to really plug into is none other than number 5 first baseman Freddie Freeman, because talk about the picture of consistency. I mean, I heard him called not by the Braves radio guys. I heard him called by another team's radio broadcaster, Mr. Runners in Scoring Position, which, while it doesn't have the same ring, while it doesn't have the same kind of languid tumble off the tongue that Mr. October does, or the Splendid Splinter, or the straw that stirs the drink, perhaps, for those of you who like self-given nicknames, still is quite nice. Mr. Runners in Scoring Position, that's what we're talking about. Mr. sounds like a villain in a Miss Marple mystery. Anyway, Mr. Risk, Freddie Freeman, he's been a machine, frankly. And I'm going to pull up his numbers. I'm going to get the foul territory stat ladies on that stat. Because I want to tell you about this. And now, he's hitting .314, which, first of all, that's incredible in and of itself. Regardless of his other numbers, hitting .314, he doesn't necessarily look like a guy who will maintain that average. He's not been at that level throughout his career, but he's in the zone right now, and that .314 goes along with .374 on base percentage, which is really, really quality. And the slugging isn't even where you'd usually see it. It's at .469. But I think that there's a real story to be told by those three numbers. That's what we call the triple slash line, the average, OBP, and slugging percentage. There's a real story that's told there. His OPS is .843. Nothing to shake a stick at. Maybe not where you would hope for your first baseman to be at. However, I think there's a very palpable trade-off that Freddie is making between more contact, a better two-strike approach, a more balanced approach, an approach that uses the whole field more, and his light and power numbers. Yes, he has only 6 home runs. Not a terrible total, nothing too shabby. Still on pace to get in the high teens for the year. You'd expect him to hit a few more, but the real number to pay attention to and why he's Mr. Risk, 44 RBIs. And that's just a buttload. That is a bundle. And remember, he missed 2 weeks. 44 RBIs having missed 2 weeks of the season, which is essentially, my quick math serves me, about a seventh of the season so far. So Freddie's working on 44 RBIs and just 207 at bats. That's pretty incredible when you think of it that way. If the average hitter gets at least 550 to 600 at bats, he's on pace for 130 RBI in the season if you prorate it like that. And it's just been the case of getting timely hits. And my friends, my dear bosom buddies, my kindred spirits over in the sabermetric community, they do a lot of things right. And then maybe I could even say we do a lot of things right, because I do consider myself that nation, if you will. However, I will always go on record as saying sabermetrics tell at best about half the story. You still need so much real-world baseball context to understand what a guy is doing for his team. And when you look at a slash line like Freddie's, where his slugging is .469 and he has 44 RBI, most sabermetric guys would love to see those two go in opposite directions. They would be more excited if his slugging was .569, even if he only had 22 RBI. Now, I dig that to a certain degree. Obviously, a .569 slugging is otherworldly, and that's something that everyone should aspire to. However, my point that I'm trying to make is that 44 RBI is still very meaningful, especially when you consider he's only played 53 games. So he's getting an RBI almost every single game. 44 RBIs on 65 hits. He's making those hits count. That's the thing. That's my point. Justin Upton, God love him, and I hope he rediscovers his stroke. But Justin Upton, the king of the solo home run. So Dan Uglin, get your hits when people are on base. The situational hitting ability, it's not made up. Clutch is not bullshit. This is not all a distribution of numbers like the friggin' Matrix. There's way more to it than that. And Freddie Freeman is the best hitter in the Braves lineup by far right now. And part of the reason for that is his determination not only not to make outs, but to really, really tear down runners on base and to take advantage of those spots. And it's a lot of singles, you know? Like I said, 6 home runs, 12 doubles, not thrilling power numbers. Not going to incite any riots. However, lots of singles, lots of timely knocks, And if you've been watching him, you know what I'm talking about, because the approach is there. Like, for example, his hit in the first inning during yesterday's game. Okay, he's facing Andrew Cashner. Now, you might not know who Andrew Cashner is, partly because he plays in San Diego, away from Regina, partly because he hasn't really hit the at all the mainstream radar yet. But you know what? I'm going to be a part of him blipping all over your radar because dude is a beast. And yes, I brought him up to illustrate a point about Freddie and Cashner. He throws just bullets. He's in the high 90s. He's generally 95, all the way to triple digits occasionally with a hard, hard breaking ball and a changeup, much like Steven Strasburg's changeup, that hangs out in the low 90s, upper 80s. So it's no joke facing this guy. He's a hawk. He's probably 6'6". He really comes over the top and just a really explosive delivery. Now, Freddy Gonzalez comes up. Andrelton Simmons on second. Two down. Cashner is not pitching around him. He's going right after him. It's the first inning. I don't know. I guess maybe Blue was on deck or McCann. I think McCann was on deck, actually. He's trying to get him out. He's trying to punch him away. And with a two-strike count, after some fastballs, after fouling off some pitches, Cashner throws a really good pitch. He throws one of those high 80s, low 90s changeups. It's breaking off the plate, down and away, definitely a ball. And Freddie just keeps a very sound approach, doesn't come out of his shoes, doesn't try to pull it through the right side like Jason Hayward sometimes does, and just knocks it right back to the box, single, RBI, 1-0 lead. And you can't ask for anything better than that in that situation. He knew what the pitcher was trying to do to get him out. He knew what he had to do to get the run in, and he found the fucking beautiful fulcrum between those two things. And I don't know. I'm just having a Freddie Freeman love fest right now, and can't nobody stop me. So I just wanted to extol his virtues for a bit because he is well deserving. He's got a great baseball name too, folks. Freddie Freeman. You kidding me? It's got the alliteration. It's got the cadence. I mean, you couldn't ask for much more from this guy. Plus, he is the number one hugger in all of baseball. And while that irks me just the tiniest bit, because I would like to see a little bit more fuego, a little bit more maybe smashing of arms and stuff, like Ugla does, something a little more, something that gives off more of a competitive fire than a hug. You know what? I'm okay with it. It's building a team spirit, and it's getting these guys closer together, so that's fine. Plus, he wears his sweet Rex vest. So, I mean, you can't do much better than Freddie Freeman, ladies and gentlemen. The power numbers, like I said, sure, they're not blowing you out of the water right now, but he's consistent. He gets the big knocks when the team needs him, and really just a hell of a guy. Hell of a guy. Okay, let's get to the Braves rotation crunch, because this is the really tricky part of this whole thing, and something that I don't envy Freddie Gonzalez at all about, because he has a decision. It's one of these decisions which could go a million different ways, and in some ways, okay, that's good, there's not a clear direction, that's not good. It's not good. I don't know why I was saying that at all. And by the way, DJ Upton bobblehead coming up in 8 days. I don't know if you really want one of his bobbleheads. I think even the bobblehead strikes 2 or 3 times in the game. But anyway, taking shots at DJ there. That's rough. What I'm getting to is obviously the Brandon Beachy issue. And it's a good problem to have. Ask Freddie Gonzalez about it. I'm sure that's the first thing that will come out of his mouth. And it is. The Braves have one of the best rotations in all of the league. We talked about it before. It's not a flashy rotation. There is no power guy at the top. There's no classic ace. There's no Verlander. There's no Price. There's no Sabathia. There's no Kershaw at the top. But it's well-rounded. it's been very good throughout the season. And they're getting another guy back, and that's Brandon Beachy, who sadly was lost to Tommy John surgery last year in the midst of the year. And not only in the midst of the year, in the midst of a sparkling campaign. When he went down, he led the majors with a 2.00. Yeah, that's right. 2 on the nose ERA. So he's a guy that is, it's no small matter to get him back. He's been battling back. He's been rehabbing. And finally, he's gotten to the point where he's making some actual starts down in the minor leagues. Now, we could trace it back decades and decades, almost 100 years, to the origins of, no, not 100 years, but decades and decades back to the origin of the five-man rotation. And it's interesting because the five-man rotation is only once every couple years does a team even think about using something different. It's always a big deal. It's always much ballyhooed. I used that word twice on one podcast. That might be a little much. But every once in a while, someone will go with a six rotation for a little while, six-man rotation. But I think at this point, the reason that people don't do that consistently is because, one, you know, the baseball is very stuck in its ways, but two, with a 25-man roster, you really need all those spots for bench players, for relievers, especially in today's, in our day and age of the Bruce Bochy micromanage of the bullpen. With that in mind, Freddie's got to make a decision. I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be surprised, but I wouldn't be floored if he decided to go six-man rotation. That would be a very bold choice. It would mean, like I said, losing another roster spot in a different location, whether that be maybe your long man out of the bullpen, whether that be somebody off the bench, what have you. That would be a very bold decision. Now, there have been some comments so far. Let's go to the tape and see what some of the Braves brass have been discussing when it comes to the Brandon Beachy situation. Now, Mark Bowman gives Frank Wren a lot of credit here for being Belichick-esque, which, while he may be hated by many, can only be a compliment. One of the great NFL coaches of all time. And one of the great inscrutable people of all time. And with that in mind, we have this quote from Atlanta Braves general manager Frank Wren. "Whatever we do will be what is best for the team," Wren said with a smile. Ha, ha, ha. There's not much to take away from there. There's a lot of moving parts in terms of how you make it work. The overriding decision will be what is best for our team and nobody else. Basically, he's not giving anything up. Not that this would be a huge, huge, competitive secret with other teams. Obviously, they know that Beachy will get some run at some point, more just about when. He's going up to AAA, and tomorrow he'll make his first AAA start. He has been starting some in double A and single A and working his way up. He hasn't looked great, giving up some home runs, more walks than he'd like. But the Braves are really thrilled to be getting him back. And there's a chance that he will start one of the two games on Tuesday. The Braves, thanks to April showers, which, as we know from the rhyme, also result in May flowers. Not the ship, but May flowers. April showers also bring doubleheaders in June. And that can be a tough thing, but it's a perfect time to get back Beachy. The Braves have a rough series with the Mets coming up in which they'll play a doubleheader sandwich between two other games. It's not rough because it's the Mets, but it's just rough because playing 4 games in 3 days is always a challenge, and you always need extra arms. So it's a great time to bring up Beachy, you know, plop him in there, give him one of the starts during that doubleheader day, and you're hoping that he can just get back in the swing of things. But after that, that's what we're really talking about. This is a very extended preamble. here's what the issue is. When BG comes back, let's assume that there's not going to be a six-man rotation. There very well could be, but for the purposes of this soliloquy / discussion, let's assume that there's no six-man rotation. Who goes? Who sits? Who's shipped down to AAA? Who goes to the bullpen? Somebody's got to go. Now, maybe Beachy comes back and gets roughed up in his first start. Maybe the Braves say, hey, this guy went under the knife 12 months ago. He had Tommy John. Let's give him a little more time to get up to speed before he's a major leaguer. That could very well happen depending on how the Mets series goes. Maybe he gets roughed up. Maybe he gets sent down to work on some things at AAA. I could totally see that. But maybe he throws a no-hitter. You know, maybe he goes 8 strong innings and strikes a bunch of people out and is throwing 93 miles an hour. At that point, it will be hard to keep him out of the rotation. The Braves starters have been good, not great. As a whole, they've been excellent. I don't mean to backtrack on what I was saying earlier when I was extolling their virtues, but, you know, they've had their struggles, as any starting staff will. But it's hard to put a finger on who's been struggling the most, because in reality, the bad games have been nicely spaced out. There's no starter that's had a run of really horrible outings. So it's hard to point to anybody who's a weak link. I don't know. It's tough. When you look at just the basic stats, not talking sabermetric, I'm just talking basic stats, Tim Hudson seems to be the most obvious candidate to be replaced. But how do you replace Tim Hudson, the hoss of your staff for the last 8 years? Maybe I believe the longest tenured Brave, a leader in the clubhouse, a borderline Hall of Fame candidate. I mean, a bulldog on the mound. And a guy who's turned it around the last few starts. Yes, he's 4-6. Yes, he has 4.4 ERA. True, he doesn't really strike out anybody anymore. But that's Timmy Hudson. You know, can you really send Timmy Hudson to the bullpen because you want to get Brandon Beachy in there? A guy who had a 2 ERA for half a season? I don't know. Let's go down the line. Paul Mahalan, 7-5, 3.65 ERA. You know, he's been Mahalan-esque. He's solid, if unspectacular. But a 1.24 whip, you know, a 2.46 average against, he's doing everything right. He's keeping the team in games, even though he didn't have such a hot start today. You put Mahalan in the bullpen. You know, he's a hard guy to put in the bullpen because he can go deep into games, a lot deeper than certain of these starters, at least consistently. You know, at least he's at a point in his career where he's used to doing that. And that's very valuable because it keeps the bullpen fresh. And, again, a bullpen which is without 2 of its best 3 relievers for the remainder of the season. So that's very important, too. Chris Medlin, 3-6. But this is why wins and losses don't matter, because he's got a 2.87 ERA. He's given up a lot more walks than he's used to, a lot more hits than he's used to, but he's still finding ways to keep guys from crossing home plate. He's still finding, 2.87 ERA. He's finding ways to keep his team in the game, and he's shown flashes of being the best out of this sixthum, if we include Beachy. I mean, this sextet, if you will. Last year, you know, but down the stretch run, he was Cy Medlin, and it would be very hard to send him to the bullpen after that, after just knowing what he's capable of. That would be a very tough decision. But the flip side of it, who would be best in the bullpen? Chris Medlin is the guy with bullpen experience out of this crew. And, you know, these guys are professionals. I'm sure they'll be able to adapt. But it's hard to see Chris Medlin getting sent to the bullpen. Maybe that's the wisest thing, though, because he is the guy with experience. The transition would be a bit easier. You'd still have him for spot starts and long relief if you needed him. Still tough to do after the guy, like I said, was Chris Cy Medlin down the stretch last year.
Now, I'll just say this right now. Mike Minor is 100% not getting sent to the bullpen. Why? Because he's quietly having one of the best seasons for a starter in the National League. And no, this is not homerism. No, this is not exaggeration. This is unadulterated fact. Mike Minor, 8-2 with a 2.44 ERA. A .94 whip. Are you kidding me? That's Cliff Lee territory. That is friggin' Pedro Martinez territory. He's got a 2.205 batting average against. Only 63 hits in 84 innings. You kidding me, Mike? Mike Minor. Dude is figuring it out ever since last year, about halfway through the season. He's adjusted his approach a little bit, and he's been mowing dudes down. He's only walked 17 guys in 84 innings. Now, I'm not the best at math, but I know for sure, that's less than 3 per 9. Let me get the exact numbers on that, because that's a very important stat. Talked about it last week. Talked about it probably the 4 weeks previous and every week before that. The three true outcomes, right? Say it with me. Three true outcomes. Homers, walks, strikeouts. That's what a pitcher controls more than anything else. And of the things that he can control, Mike Minor has been master of his domain, as they say on that show that we saw once. Mike Minor this year, finally the stat ladies get on it. We're talking about 1.8 walks per nine to go with 8.29 Ks per nine. And if the ratio does not readily make itself apparent in your noggin, I mean, just unbelievable. 4.59 K to walk ratio. Again, Cliff Lee territory, Justin Verlander territory, and I'm not saying that he's these guys yet, not at all. He's got a lot to prove. You know, he's still a youngin. But this is looking like a really, really solid part of the rotation for years to come. And, you know, he's not getting sent to the bullpen. He's not getting sent to the minors. So I think I can safely cross one guy off the list. But he's the first guy I've been able to cross off, because all these other guys, whether it's Mahalan and Hudson with, you know, who've been solid, not great, Medlin's previous experience in the bullpen, there's a reason to send all these guys to maybe make one of those three guys, either the guy who goes down, goes to the bullpen, what have you. So fifth, and certainly not least, is Julio, the Colombian cannonball to run. Yeah, that's not going to catch on. I need to bring Carson back next week. We'll do some more nickname brainstorming. In fact, maybe we'll just have a weekly segment called the Nickname Brainstorm, or something even more catchy than that. We'll put our hot quip people on it. Julio Teheran, 4-3, with a 3.6 ERA, 1.19 WHIP, only 15 walks in 77 innings, has been very good. And not only has been very good, as we talked about last week, has been consistently getting better and better and better and better with each start. His ERA, aside from one start, has dropped incrementally with each time out. And this is the guy. You know, this is your future arm. This is your future stud. As things stand now, the Braves would love for it to be him and Minor leading that rotation for years to come. Do you really want to send this guy down to the minors? Do you really want to try to turn this guy into a setup man right now? And yes, you need to try to win. That's first and foremost. Games won this year count more than games won 3 years down the road. It's simple economics. Money in your pocket now is worth more than money in your pocket 3 years from now. And Julio Teheran could be a big part of that winning 3 years from now. So yes, you've got to try to win today. And if the thing that's best for the team, if really and truly the thing that increases the Braves' likelihood of winning the World Series is sending Julio down to the minors and bringing Gucci in there, I guess I could get behind that. I don't know if that's the case. The guy has really been figuring it out. We give him a lot of credit in previous weeks for not only being a good pitcher, not only throwing scoreless innings, not only that almost no-hitter that he had, but sometimes when things aren't going great, when he gets roughed up a little bit, when he gives up a home run in the first inning or a couple first inning home runs, the dude has been able to bear down, settle in, and gut it out and bring the Braves at least to the fourth or the fifth inning, at least give his team a chance to win. And you got to respect the hell out of that. He's responded so well to being given the starting job. I don't know. You know, Travis, today when I was speaking with him in the grocery store, which we are now sponsored. Thank you, Safeway. Safeway, always shop freshly, except when you're not. Anyway, that's not their slogan. I don't think. While we deal with the impending lawsuit from Safeway, let's keep talking about Julio Teheran, because the words that Travis used earlier were stunted growth, stunted development. And I tend to agree, and that's why you hear me espousing the position of keeping him with the big club, because why throw a wrench in a good thing? And yes, I said it earlier. I said it 25 seconds ago or a minute and a half ago or 4 minutes ago. Time is awfully distorted in this little radio world of ours here on Blog Talk Radio. All territory. Stunting growth is a real thing. You want to keep a guy in a rhythm. A guy has gotten comfortable. This guy is Julio. Don't mess with Don Julio, man. Don Julio knows what he's doing. He knows his blue agave 100%. And he knows his fastball and his friggin' changeup. I mean, this guy has done everything the Braves asked him to do. He shot through the minor league system. Yeah, he had a rough year last year, but what did he do? He stuck with it. He didn't try to abandon the plan. Part of the reason he had a rough year last year is because he was trying to make adjustments both to his delivery generally and to his changeup specifically. He did both those things. His delivery looks really good this year. He's found consistency. He found his release point. And along with that has come a devastating changeup, which was on full display in that near no-hitter against the P-Rats. Just fooling guys. Just straight-up arm action domination. And it helps that you throw 94. You know, I mean, Medlin has a great changeup too. But the ceiling of Medlin's changeup could never be as high as the ceiling of Teheran's changeup, simply due to velocity. Velocity is the name of the game. And I was just watching V for Vendetta last night. I wish I could have a long string of V words to throw at you. Vilification, vivify, vivid. That's all I got. Voluptuous. Julio Teheran's not voluptuous, but his changeup is, because it's big and sexy and it rolls in there. And I don't know. We've hashed it out. I've given you every side of this, and there's not a clear answer. There's not a clear answer. To me, here's what I would do. Although, I don't know. If I was the manager, maybe I would just chicken out and go with the six-man rotation, because that's kind of almost the non-decision. That's deferring the decision. Here's what I'd do. I'd have to put Chris Medlin in the bullpen. I know. It kills me to say that. It really does. But I'm not sure what else makes sense for this team. But one other thing that I would consider is maybe Hudson, maybe, just maybe, I know he's an Iron Man, maybe he's a little tired, maybe that arm's a little sore, or even if it's not, maybe it still behooves him to just have a little time off. Maybe you throw him on the DL, throw him on the 15-day DL with right arm soreness, bring Beachy in there, see how Beachy responds, reevaluate it in a couple weeks, reevaluate it after three starts. I mean, Timmy Hudson is a beast, but there's no reason to overwork him right now. We're going to need him in the stretch run. We're going to need him in the playoffs. Maybe it's the thing to do. I don't know. But Freddy Gonzalez has a tough job, especially here. I will be eagerly, eagerly awaiting to see his decision here, kind of the direction he goes with this starting pitching crunch, and also eagerly glued to the TV for Mr. Beachy's return, which, again, should be Tuesday against the Mets. So I'm not sure if it would be the early game or the late game. I tend to think it would be the early game, maybe, just because of a higher possibility that you have to go to the pen early because he's not quite where the other starting pitchers are. And if you are going to use the bullpen early,
I think you'd rather do it in the first game, so at least you know what you're doing and you know your limitations in the second game. But look out for Beachy on Tuesday, and look out for Freddy and see what he's doing. Let's talk a little bit about All-Stars. We're not going to do the full hour and a half today. I just don't have it in me. But these last 10 or 15 minutes or so, let's talk about All-Stars. Let's talk about the Summer Classic. That's what it's called, the Midsummer Classic. There it is. I knew something was a little off with that. And I guess we'll start with the Senior Circuit, the National League. There are a lot of guys who are, I think, who should be considered locks for the All-Star team. Troy Tulowitzki, just having a hell of a year. Just having one hell of a year, leading this impressive, surprising, and somewhat sustaining its success Colorado Rockies team. I mean, let's not jinx them. But both he and Cargo, I mean, the All-Star game, to quote Dave Cameron, managing editor and excellent writer over at Fangraphs, the game would be a farce without those guys. An absolute farce. And first is tragedy, then is farce. You know, Yadier Molina, got to get him in there. I don't know who starts, Molina or Posey. He got some really, really good catching candidates there. I wonder if Evan Gattis could possibly make a cameo as a reserve. That would be pretty cool if he could sneak in as kind of the last guy in, the fan vote or something like that. I mean, I think if it comes down to that, stats be damned, though his stats are pretty damn good for a rookie. If it comes down to kind of a last fan vote, Gattis has got to have the upper hand, and they are powerful hands, but because of his story. And because if it comes down to the scrutiny of him versus another guy, his story is going to be even more widely circulated. I think most people in baseball circles know about Evan Gattis by now, but maybe not, you know, the casual American League fan who doesn't really pay much attention to the NL. But if he's logging on to MLB.com to vote for his final guy to sneak into the American League, he wants to see, or she wants to see, what the final vote is in the National League. Guy Evan Gattis, who the heck is he? You learn a little bit about what he's done as a man, not only as a baseball player in his life so far, and how could you not vote for that guy? Andrew McMuffin, a.k.a. Andrew McCutchen of Pittsburgh, has been cranking it up. He's got a lot of built-in votes already from, you know, just being a stud these last few years. What about Carlos Gomez? I mean, it'd be very difficult to keep him out. He has been straight thugging for Milwaukee, even though they've been really bad. That's not what the All-Star team is about. The All-Star team is about individual performances. And Carlos Gomez has, he's just blown me away, frankly. I thought he was what he was. I thought he was at a point in his career where he wasn't going to improve very much. He wasn't going to get much worse. He just kind of was what he was. And he had speed, he had defense, no contact ability. And it turns out he still strikes out a lot. He still barely walks. But he does have contact ability, and not only contact ability, but power, evidenced by his 573 slugging percentage, Gattis-esque, a weighted on-base percentage of 393. That is dirt nasty, and 11.6 runs saved in the field. Good for 4 WAR. He's already got 4 WAR. World War 4. We're, Carlos Gomez, man, put him in there. A lot of great outfield candidates in the National League. A lot of great outfield candidates. Let's stay in Milwaukee. Jean Segura, or is it Gene? Gene Gray. Gene Segura. I want to call him Jean. Jean Segura. I mean, this dude, still hitting 340. Only come down a tick or two from the peak there with his batting average. Still in 340, and he's got power too. 9 bombs to go with 19 steals. I mean, he can put the bat on the ball at any time. He has some of the best contact abilities in baseball. He's a speed demon. He's playing shortstop. I mean, dude is doing it all and definitely making a run at Rookie of the Year, competing with our boy Gattis. I mean, there are a lot of good candidates here. Paul Goldschmidt, obviously. a front runner, maybe for the first base position, along with Joey Votto. Votto's always there doing it quietly, doing it on the sabermetric side of things. The pitchers are exciting too. I know the fans don't get to vote on pitchers, but it's still a fun thing to speculate about, a fun thing to wonder who would get on. And I wonder. Now, we know guys like Kershaw, probably Adam Wainwright, maybe Jordan Zimmermann have locked up a spot. But the youth representative on the pitching staff is really cool. Now, I'm talking, of course, about Matt Harvey and Shelby Miller and Pat Corbin. I mean, it's not just one guy. It is a stable of young arms. And there's no doubt in my mind that Shelby Miller and Matt Harvey are making it. Pat Corbin, with his ridiculous record, probably will make it too. I mean, I can't remember the last time there were so many good rookie pitchers in a game. And, yeah, Kershaw will probably get the nod to start because he's Cy Young Award winner and all that. But you could easily make a case for Matt Harvey starting this game. No question. I mean, he has been that good across the board. Across el mundo. Across the world. Yeah, I'm trying to think about the catcher position because, I mean, I'm serious about Evan Gattis. Let's go to his stats right now and we can kind of suss out what's going on there. Because having a good story is not something to be discounted when it comes to voting for All-Stars. The fans have a big say. The fans love their good stories. And Gattis, the power's there. He's at 263, but he's a catcher. The important number there is slugging percentage, 603. Any slugging percentage that starts with a 6 is good fun. A 386 weighted on base percentage, 14 bombs. Dude's got 14 home runs already. And, wow, Zips. He was predicted at one point before the season to hit 12 home runs, and I think they reevaluated it after seeing how he was doing, and then was predicted to hit 26. So it's kind of amazing. 14 home runs in only 175 plate appearances. That's not at bats. That's plate appearances. I mean, the dude's rate stats are redonkulous. Even though he strikes out a lot, he has been very good from the plate and way better than people expected in the field, whether it's catching, filling in and left. I mean, you got to put this guy on the team. Come on. Who wants Russell Martin to be your third catcher? I mean, he's washed up. He's with the. I mean, come on. Don't give me Russell Martin. Yeah, he's had a slight career revival this year. I've heard enough. That's a BS sabermetric argument, partly fueled by his catcher defense. Which, if Russell Martin has 4.4 runs and Yadier Molina has 1.1 fielding runs, he is for damn sure not four times better than Yadier Molina. So I'm going to throw that whole stat out because that, no way, Russell Martin. Get out of there, you Canadian bastard. Put Evan Gattis on this team. He deserves it. The Braves deserve it, frankly. They're not going to get that many All-Stars. You know, it's easy to talk about certain guys, but overall, there's not going to be a ton of All-Stars from the team. Maybe Freddie makes it as a reserve, but I don't even think so. With all the talent that's going on. So we've covered the National League pretty well. I just want to read you, going to Dave Cameron at FanGraphs, and I'm going to kind of nod to him. I'm going to read you the National League lineup. This is his final prediction for what the lineup will be. It's always fun to just put these souped-up lineups together, and so this is what he did. Leading off in center field from the Pittsburgh Pirates, Andrew McCutchen. Hitting second, playing first base, from the Reds, from Cincinnati, Joey Votto. Hitting third, playing third, representing the whipping boy of the Big Apple, I'm talking about David Wright. Batting cleanup, Manning. The shortstop position from the Colorado Rockies, Troy Tulowitzki. His teammate right behind him, playing left field, Carlos Cargo Gonzalez. Hitting sixth, the designated hitter from the Washington Nationals, Bryce Harper. Batting seventh, playing right field, the other cargo from the Brewers, Carlos Gomez. And batting eighth, the catcher from the St. Louis Cardinals, Yadier Molina. Finally hitting ninth, manning the second bag from the Reds, Brandon Phillips. Obviously, a lot of guys that could make it in here. A lot of deserving candidates, but I kind of like the starting lineup. That's fun. So let's talk about the American League a little bit. I must confess, my tummy is nothing short of grumble-rific right now. So we're gonna get through the AL in not too long. I must away to make myself some hay. By hay, I mean dinner. The American League, the junior circuit, as we're wont to call it, maybe a little bit less, maybe a little bit less of a challenge. Although, sneaky candidates that I think will surprise a lot of people when they hear about how good these guys have been. But we'll go again with the game would be a farce without them. And obviously, our two MVP battlers from last year, Mike Trout and Miguel Cabrera. I mean, Miguel Cabrera, he's on another planet. He doesn't reside on planet Earth. He commutes in to Detroit. He's got to play the games, but he definitely lives on Venus or Jupiter or Mars or, you know, Krypton or whatever they're called, because he's absurd. And I thank God, Jesus, and all of the heavens that I get to see this guy play. I mean, Albert Pujols, unbelievable. One of the best decades to start a career of all time. A shoe-in for the Hall of Fame, even we can say that halfway through his career. But I don't know. I'm not gonna throw out what he did, but I think Miggy right now might be at a higher peak than Pujols ever was. And he does it in a different way. Different approach. It's that incredible just right center field power, and he can turn on it if he needs to, but he usually doesn't. And he walks almost as much as he strikes out, a lot of the times more in certain seasons. This season he's walking 13% of the time, striking out 14% of the time. His batting average is a cool .363. His on-base percentage is an even more cucumber-like .451. His weighted on-base percentage is .460. I mean, this getting into Ted Williams territory here. And as fun as it is to ogle and goggle and Google and Google his numbers, watching him hit is even more fun. It's such an unassuming approach, quiet hands, quiet body, funk. It doesn't have the violence of some hitters. I do love that max effort swing. I do love my Juan Francisco, Adrian Beltre, Carlos Sandoval. Wait, are all max effort guys Latino third basemen? That's a discussion for another day. But Miguel Cabrera is the polar opposite. Everything is so quiet. Everything is so easy. His swing, it doesn't even look like a power stroke. His right hand comes off. He almost always finishes the swing with a one-handed flourish. But he just pounds the ball. 18 home runs so far, 51 runs scored, a whopping, yeah, you heard this right, 69 RBI so far on the young season. Suck on that, Saber Matrician. That does matter. Good for 4 WAR even. I mean, the man is a marvel. If he's not hitting third in the All-Star Game lineup, expect the world to end, because, I mean, he's just the man. And Mike Trout mentioned him. Had a bit of a rough start to the season. Took a little time to get going, but he's just taken off. He's got his average up to 300. He's slugging .560. 12 home runs, 14 steals. I mean, you can't hold this guy down. He's too real. He's too redonkulous. And trying to lead the Angels back to respectability, I guess you'd have to say. So those two guys are obvious. Got to get the obvious things out of the way up top in this thing. And the established stars of the American League have not really been, I don't know. They haven't really been represented, like maybe the established stars of the senior circuit. And I'm talking about Evan Longoria is having a good year. Joe Mauer is quietly hitting really well, as he always does, and up in Minnesota. But I don't know. Robinson Cano has really cooled off after a hot start. It's just not the same name that you're used to seeing. Big Poppy will be DH, as he always is. I don't know. Not as impressive as I expect. We got some guys, though, who are not the established stars, who clearly deserve to be starters. And two guys out of the Charm City, Baltimore, one of my favorite towns on this green planet, in this verdant country. Crash, Chris Davis, what a beast. And Manny Machado. If those two guys aren't starting, or at least on the damn team, something's really wrong. I mean, Manny Machado, you can't start him at third because Miguel Cabrera is the third baseman. Unfortunately, that's out. Shit, slide him over to shortstop and start him there. Hitting 315 with a 350 on base, 480 slugging. He just is always on base. I believe he's leading the universe in doubles. So many clutch hits, such great defense at third. Glenn Thug and the Orioles are really, really excited that they have him as part of their organization, that they drafted him back in the day, because that was just a stroke of genius, and it didn't take a lot of pocket science, and you know, he went at the top of the draft. But I'm actually curious. Let's rehash the top of that draft a little bit, because Manny Machado, I think he went top five, but I think it was a really impressive top five as well. Yeah, he was the third pick of the 2010 draft. Yeah, that was an exciting draft. Bryce Harper went first overall. Jameson Taillon, still yet to make his Pirates debut. He was taken out of high school, went number two. And then Machado went third, also out of high school. He's in Miami. Hopefully he's not to that clinic. Good Lord, I hope not. But, I mean, just a really exciting pick there for the Orioles. They could have gone other ways. Matt Harvey was at 7. Chris Gayle was at 13. I mean, there's a lot of talent at the top half of this draft. Top half of the first round of this draft, at least. And not a ton of guys that have made the majors, because this was only, you know, 3 years ago. But Manny Machado, put him on the team. And then Crash Davis, like we said, reinvented himself on the Orioles. Just seems more comfortable. He was always an extra piece in Texas. He was never their first baseman. He was never their right fielder. He never seemed like he felt like he was part of the team. And I've heard a lot of interviews with him. I've read his words and heard his words since being part of this Showalter-led Orioles staff or team squad. He loved it. He loved being the man there. He loved having an established spot in the middle of the order. He loved having a position that he can play every day. And he's friggin' responded. He's hitting 335 with 20 bombs. I mean, I don't need to tell you anything else, and he's on the All-Star team. I don't need to tell you anything else. Yeah, he strikes out a quarter of the time. I don't care. He's got a 454 weighted on-base percentage. Remember how I was oohing and eyeing over Miguel Cabrera? Miguel Cabrera is like 0.01 of a point higher in weighted on base percentage than Crash Davis. So suck on that. Dude is an MVP candidate, MVP candidate right now. There's no question. 20 homers, 20 doubles. I mean, he crushes it. Chris crushes it to all fields. Just a really cool story, and I'm really happy that he has he's blossomed like this out in Baltimore. So how about the middle of that American League order? I'm not going to go through every guy. I must confess, I don't know the American League well enough to critique all these choices. Josh Donaldson, though, let's give a shout out to Oakland. He should be in there. That's a good third baseman. Carlos Santana, too, has had a heck of a year. But let's go to Dave Cameron's American League lineup, because I'm curious there. Curious what he has to say, and I think it's going to be a little less imposing than the National League one, but still a really fun lineup. And I just like to do the call. That's the fun part. So I think this might be our last little moment in the show. We're talking about the American League starting lineup. We already went through the National League one. Batting first, playing center field for the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim, Mike Trout. Batting second, the catcher from Minnesota, Joe the Gun Mauer. Batting third, Manning third, from the city of cars, the crumbled city of cars, Miguel Cabrera. Hitting fourth, longtime DH of the Boston Red Sox, I'm talking about Davey Big Papi Ortiz. Batting fifth, playing right field, representing the Blue Jays of Canada, Jose Joey Bats Bautista. Batting sixth, playing first base, from Charm City, Chris Crash Davis. Batting second, seventh, batting seventh, playing second base, the little engine that could, Dustin Pedroia. Batting eighth, playing shortstop, also from Detroit, the man with the H in the wrong place, Johnny Peralta. Finally, batting ninth, playing left field, for the New York Yankees, Brett Gardner. A little bit harder to get excited about Brett Gardner, as you can see by the lull in my voice there. Huh. By the way, I don't know any other words where three quarters of the letters in that word are all the same letter. So, talking about lull. We started the episode with lull. We're finishing with lull. And, so there's your challenge for the week, folks. Go out and find me another word that's actually a word that's not just a phonetic sound like ooh or ah or ee, wherein three quarters of the letters in that word are all the same letter. I think I've just stumped the populace. I might have just stumped y'all. How does that feel? I don't know. Okay, I'm so hungry. I'm going to go cook a steak. I'm going to fry it up good, and I'm going to fry it up good. And thank you so much for joining me. This has been a ton of fun. I've been broadcasting from my bed. I told you at the beginning of the episode. And with you kindly people as my audience, as my really as my disciple and chosen children, I've been able to come fully awake after 73 minutes of this show. So if nothing else, you've provided me a gentle kind of rise from my nap. So thank you for joining me. Carson will be back next week, or so he claims. We're going to try and get Travis back on at some point, do a little shout-out to the good old days, maybe three bros, three men in a tub, the rub, the dub, and the dub. It's been foul territory. Here on Blog Talk Radio, we're sponsored by Back Sports Page and SidelinesApp.com. Go to SidelinesApp.com right now. Just do it. We're here every single Wednesday, 6 p.m. Pacific, 9 p.m. Eastern. Yeah, I said that backwards because I'm controversial. It's been foul territory. Thanks for joining me. I'm popular and popping dope. Rent for set, pop a dope. Dodging all obstacles. Trapping at the stop and go. Boy, you know you lame if you still riding stop and go. Dissect the beat and then I turn into a particle. Pardon dough, I'm hardened dough. You should read the articles. I'm riding high and dodging hoes. You better hope I'm dodging yours. Marta hole, dollar hole. White looking Madonna hole. Don't shake a bun of Ferragamo and I'm Prada hole. College hole, zone three. Niggas with a lot of gold, Snoop got the dope. I just love being by the stove. Here's some food for thought, a little food for your soul. I'm like a comma. I love being right next to O's. I had a long day, my nerve bad. Yeah, I'm smoking on loud, I know you heard it. Hit the jury store, with $100,000. I can't help it, I'm addicted to the rubber band. Lead a trap house, with $100,000. Can't help it, I'm addicted to the rubber band. We sit high.
playing like we superhuman beings. Cause mulatto, black on black European. Too hard to swallow, like Eugene King's. And number one thesis, do you believe in Jesus? They say money is the root of all diseases. Call the doctor, I see honest in my thesis. Summer vacation, one trip, three bricks. Baby mama say I'm impatient, my sons need shit. When you pull up at the front, all you see is whip. Diddy bop to the back, all you see is zip. That Ziploc and garbage bag. Usher Raymond in this game, bitch, I got it bad.
I had a long day, my nerve bad. Yeah, I'm smoking on loud, I know you heard that. Hit the jury store, what a $100,000. I can't help it, I'm addicted to the rubber band. Need a trap house, what a $100,000. I can't help it, I'm addicted to the rubber band. It's time to ring up, I got a $100,000. I can't help it, I'm addicted to the rubber band.
My blood need me, but he greedy. Ran off, told him, catch me on the TV. See, I'm from where you robbed Pete or the PayPal. I'm yelling, fuck the world. I woke up with my dick card. Big dog, big